today's episode of According to Your Purpose, we have Jake Crane. Jake hosts one of the hottest and fastest growing sports podcasts in the country. This last year, he even had his show, Crane and Company, picked up by the Daily Wire. In this episode, we got to talk about the importance of sports and culture and his recent reporting on the UPenn swimmer Leah Thomas. His reporting even sparked a national conversation online about men playing in women's leagues. Jake is a passionate guy, and I think that shows in this episode. Here's my talk with Jake. Well, Jake, thank you for doing this. I'm really excited about this. I'm a fan of the show. To get started, tell me a little bit about the inception of your show, I guess starting with the J Boy Show, which ultimately became Crane & Company. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, man, and inception's probably the best word because I still feel like I'm living like a dream within a dream within another dream, kind of the way it went down. I'm from a sports family. My father played in the NFL, coached in college for a long time. I played in college, got into coaching in the football world. I coached for 9.5 years, 6 at the Division I level, was coaching up in the state of Montana when COVID hit. And if you know anything about the coaching world, especially when you get the college level at the Division I level, there's not a lot of time off. And as crazy as that time was, they sent the coaching staff kind of back. I was able to go see family, not that COVID was a good thing, but got bored, man. I'm used to working, 17, 18 hour days. Recruiting never stops. And so I went and got a $50 mic, and I didn't have my school laptop or the coaching laptop the school issued me, but I had an old one where I was seeing family in Mississippi and just kind of was messing around with it. I'm not a technological savant by any stretch of the imagination, so it took every ounce of, the Steve Jobs I have in me to be able to get it on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and was actually kind of worried about not, I wanted to talk and have fun. I always thought, watching ESPN and things like that, that I could do it, but it wasn't like I'm doing this now sort of plan. And I didn't want to say anything that would jeopardize. I was interviewing for the defensive coordinator job at the school I was at the time. So I didn't want to say anything that would jeopardize that. And, it's impossible to make this story short. So if I don't say certain parts, it's not going to make sense. So I didn't know what a good amount of views were, right? Like, look, in football, I know how much yardage we can give up before I know we played bad, or certain busted coverages or misalignments or things like that. In this, I really didn't know. So to me, Joe Rogan was good. Like, a million views is where it's at. So I put one out and I'm looking and this is a day and a half later. No, it's got 10,000 views. I was like, that kind of sucks, maybe it's not, I don't know what was good. So I started kind of messing around with it, put some on social media, and I got good feedback from it. People were like, hey, we want more of this. Cause I was just going on there, saying what I think, I'm not beholden to anybody. And it just kept picking up traction and picking up traction. And we didn't know when we were going to go back. That's the thing about COVID. There was no, hey guys, we're going to be back on this date. We'd get updates and we had the early signing period for the first time in recruiting. So that knocked a lot of it out. But it was just a weird time, just like it was for everybody. So I kept putting out more and more. And so then I started getting asked about sponsorships. Hey, we want to sponsor the show. And so I'm having to do this research on all right, a 30-second ad read, a minute ad read. And the market at that point for podcasts, everything's kind of set, but it wasn't as defined as it is now. So I'm looking around, I'm like, all right, so if I give you 30-second reads, a month worth of 30-second reads for $2,000 per month. They're like, yes. I was like, you got it. Hitting me. I was like, not that you don't get paid a lot in coaching, but I'm like, are you for real? I was like, in my head, I'm like, so if I do this 4 times, I was like, oh my God. So that's when it kind of hit me. I was like, all right, well, I'll just see a little bit what's going on. So got a few sponsorships. And then all of a sudden, I got a call from a couple investors that were in Atlanta, went up there and met with them because I was just doing audio, and got put on the Believe Network. Which, again, I didn't know that from Adam, what any of these podcast networks were. So I started doing it on there, did good on there, got moved to Atlanta. They put me on video in this studio. It was fantastic. And then 6 months later, I get message from Colin Cowherd's people saying that they want to put us on The Volume, which is his podcast network with Draymond Green and all these other people. So we were like, yeah, for sure. So we signed a deal with them for a certain amount of months. And then after those months were up, we did so well that they wanted to re-sign us for longer. And that's when Ben Shapiro and the Daily Wire reached out to us. And I ended up calling the head coach and being like, look, man, I don't know another way to explain this than just to explain it. He was like, go do it, man. I was thinking, you know, I got time. I could get back in if I wanted to. And then it's just, you know, blown up. And now we're here. And it's just, it's been amazing, man. It's crazy. I spin a dreidel every morning when I wake up just to make sure I'm like in the same. You know, nothing would surprise me.
So you had a hit right off the bat? It started off as a hit?
Man, that was my oom-bop, man.
What do you attribute that to?
I think timing is obviously super important in life. It's one of the most important things with communication. You know, people were kind of looking for maybe an outlet that wasn't pushing a narrative that, you know, goes against what half the country believes or what most of the country believes. And I was up there just saying things. I know how the sausage is made in this deal. I think that helps. But I think I also offer perspective that, you know, is a little bit different than everybody else. You're not just getting the generic, oh, well, they need to run the ball better, or, oh, they need to shoot the ball better. I mean, me and my brother, you know, as a co-host, and David Cohn, my other co-host, like, we know this, like Ben and them know politics. Like, so if you're passionate about something and you've gone through the experience of that something and you're willing to offer a perspective that's different than what you're going to get on ESPN or what you're going to get on Fox and or some of these, you know, big boys, I think it's inviting, because there's a group of the country that's been turned off from sports because we've now, just like everything else in society, melded politics into sports. And when you do that, as divisive as we are nowadays, I mean, you ruin one of the last havens that we have to actually bring people together, because just like around the rest of the country, if my team does well, the person to my right, I don't know if they voted Republican, Democrat, Independent, Libertarian, whatever, but when our team scores, we high five. I mean, so it's, I think it's kind of refreshing is the best way to put it, I think, that encompasses the most of it without, you know, sounding too braggadocious.
What I love about your show, I find, and this has been, I've gotten less interested in sports over the last couple of years because of the things that you're talking about, the politicization. What I find about your show that I love so much is when I watch your show, I can tell that you guys love sports. When I watch ESPN, it feels very much like MSNBC personalities that have been relegated to sports. Do you think that's true across the board for sports commentary?
Well, here's the way I like kind of explain it to people. NFL games are fantastic to go to. There's some great atmospheres, but it's a lot different going to a Falcons game than it is a Georgia game. Just the feeling is different. That genuine passion. Not saying all the passion in the NFL is manufactured. I'm not saying that. I grew up in a state that didn't have a pro team, so it's a little bit different from the lens I look at it, even though I can kind of see both point of views. But I feel like the way we talk about sports is, again, when you are trying to explain something or debate something or maybe offer an opinion on something, experts have to be passionate about their field, in my opinion, to really be able to talk about it. And we see people that aren't in all walks of life. We see this on the mainstream sports media channels all the time. They have writers that they go into and they get all these ideas from these writers and they pick ideas that contrast the other idea enough to where they think they can appease both sides and then upset both sides at the same time. Well, when you do that, you're not picking something you necessarily believe in. That's not to say that having writers is a bad thing. That's not to say that listening to multiple opinions is the same thing. But it's different when I am just mimicking somebody else's opinion that I'm passionate about, as opposed to diving into something I'm passionate about personally, or maybe it's an opinion that I agree with somebody else had that I didn't think about. I can argue that all the way as far as you want to argue, because I truly believe that. Where you see people get stuck is when they pick arguments that deep down they don't believe in and they're just doing it for clicks. You can only argue it up to a certain point. It's just like coaching in football. You either know schemes or you don't. Like, once you get far enough into it, you can either speak the language and you understand what's happening, or you've been faking it to a point to where now you're just general terminology and understanding of the basics don't get you far enough. That's what I think is the difference. And I'm not trying to over-explain it, but the best way I think is like going to a Tampa Bay Bucks game and then go to a Florida game. Just that genuine feel of, hey man, these people are here because they really love this. Like, it matters. It affects them. That's how I was brought up. Not to say, you don't want to be smart about everything or be able to speak about everything, but if I had to pick one thing to defend with my life, it would be a sports argument.
One of the things that I think is actually kind of changing college football is the NIL, which is the name, image, and likeness, and the transfer portal. How do you feel about those rule changes specifically in college sports? Because I think there's a few things that are kind of wrong with it. I graduated from Louisiana Tech, so we get the short end of the stick in terms of, NIL. We don't have the money that LSU is going to have. The other thing is there's no team allegiance. I think it kills the college spirit when you can change from team to team every season. They don't even have to honor contracts. How do you feel about those changes?
You can group them together, but I think when we're arguing the merit of each other and, at the end, when you're comparing everything together, it's not a bad comparison, but I think arguing each, we have to be able to separate the two. And I also think that there's a difference between not wanting something to happen and something being let out before it was ready, before the clay was molded. I think what we saw with both NIL and the transfer portal is they just release them with no guardrails. Some people call it building the parachute on the way down. If you're going to alter, and I'm talking ground shaking, earthquake alter the college sports world, which is what NIL and the transfer portal have done, you better be pretty buttoned up before you just let that beast out. It's like in Congress, and I know they do this all the time, but like just letting a bill go through to let it go through, not carving it into a way where it is its best form. And I think that's the problem with NIL and the transfer portal. Look, it would be unbelievably hypocritical for me to sit here and say, hey, buy my merch, listen to my show, I want to make money off my name, image, and likeness. Meanwhile, I'm telling another person who offers a craft, which is playing that sport. It's not everybody could do it. If everybody could do it, it'd be a whole heck of a lot easier. We wouldn't even be having this conversation. But I can't get mad at somebody for trying to make money off their name, image, and likeness. Now, we have to define what name, image, and likeness is, though. Where we've lost the kit and caboodle in colleges, name, image, and likeness was supposed to be if Bryce Young wants to do a deal with Dr. Pepper and be on a Fansville commercial, that deal is between Bryce Young, his representatives, and the people at Dr. Pepper and their representatives. It should not have the University of Alabama involved. And I'm not trying to single out Alabama. Everybody's doing this. But now we see these collectives where it's truly pay for play, where they just pull money from businesses in and go use it to entice kids through payments to go to their school and say, hey, you're sponsored by this group, and it's mediated through the collective at the university. The universities have replaced the NCAA as the middleman. That's all they did. That's all they did with NIL. I don't think it should be that way. I think it should be for the player and then for the agency that they're representing, Dr. Pepper, whatever. Now, if we're talking about jerseys, if we're talking about jersey sales and the university has them, the jerseys in the stadium at the game, okay, well, you can get a cut of that because you're the ones providing the jerseys that they're selling to make money off of. But we've now just intermingled the whole thing. And then you look at the transfer portal. You just let it go and say, I mean, it's like Elsa from Frozen. You just let it go. You can't just do that. Like, to me, that's what's caused. And there are some positive side effects. I think the COVID year, the extra year mixed with the transfer portal has given us what we've seen in this NCAA basketball tournament. Make no mistake, there are some positives, but I do believe there are carve-outs that should be in there that can keep this train from just going off the rails, where now it's just true free agency. That's what it is. You're getting a proven commodity as opposed to projecting a high school kid to perform in college. Now, how do you make those changes? Well, you could have done this at the beginning, but you didn't. All you do is you say, listen, you can transfer outside of your conference anywhere in the country. If you want to go from LSU to Utah, if you want to go from Cal to Rutgers, that's fine. But you cannot transfer without sitting out a year. Doesn't matter if it's Power 5 or Group of 5, up and down, doesn't matter to me. But if you're going to transfer within your own conference and within your own division within your own conference, you need to have to sit out at least 1 year unless your head coach has been removed by any circumstance, whether that is taking another job, whether that is being fired. Then I think you should have the freedom to transfer within the conference. So that to me is where I would change it. And then also change the rule where new teams in Division I don't have to have these paused years where they play against Division I opponents like we saw Bellarmine in college basketball, and not be eligible for the NCAA tournament or postseason play or to be able to win that conference. But with the transfer portal, That's a quick and easy change, I believe, that will stop a lot of tampering, because it's a lot different transferring from one conference to another than transferring from LSU to Arkansas.
Do you think these changes are leading to the bad behavior that you're starting to see in college sports? The first thing that comes to mind is specifically the Brandon Miller story. And you might want to tell people about the Brandon Miller story if they're unfamiliar with it.
Yeah. I don't blame people doing stupid things and high profile people doing stupid things on the transfer portal or NIL. I don't blame. Look, kids were getting paid way before this. Let's be honest. Now you're just hearing about it. I mean, my dad got paid when he was going to Auburn. Like, this isn't some new thing. Jimbo Fisher said it best. NIL's been happening for a while. Y'all just found out about it. It just became legal. So I feel like that's a bridge too far. Look, anytime you infuse young people with money, it's going to be unpredictable. That's why I believe that if you get NIL payments or at least, you know, with my guys, I encourage all of them, you need to take a finance class. You need to understand what a Roth IRA is. You need to understand how to invest your money. You need to understand how to budget yourself. And sometimes we see guys that take to that really well and they're mature with it. And we see guys that are immature with it. I don't think you'll ever stop that. I think it's the human condition. But now that the payments are legal, I don't think the amount of stupidity has increased or decreased within young human beings, especially young men. That have been told how great they are, and now they're getting this influx of cash. Sometimes people just have to learn through consequences, and that's life.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the interesting things kind of happening in sports is you're seeing younger generations, Gen Z, kind of fall away from sports, and you're seeing, you know, the SpongeBob-themed NFL games and all these different kind of like gimmicks trying to get young people interested. What do you think is lost when we don't have sports as like a center shared piece of culture in a country?
Well, I think the biggest advantage that the United States has had over time is that we're the most competitive people. We're the most competitive group of people on the planet. I mean, why do you think we lead in everything? Well, at least used to lead or are maintaining a slight lead now in all the important stuff. Because at the end of the day, we want to win in everything we do. And when you have a huge group of people, we're one big team. It's the greatest sports analogy in the world. Whether it was technology, whether it was you know, waging war, whether it was trying to build the most civilized society or be the most inclusive society, we are the most competitive people on the planet. But what you're seeing with young people is they're being told competition is bad. They're being told that, oh, that's toxic, whether it's masculinity or femininity. That, oh, if you're competitive, that means that somebody has to lose. And if somebody loses, then somebody's feelings are going to be hurt. Or, oh, if you're hard on somebody or give somebody tough love, then that's really bad for them. No, that's what has molded us, speaking of releasing something before it's ready, into the country that we have been in the past. And that's why, you know, you have people that are old school in that way of thinking, like myself, watching other people in my generation and in my younger brother's generation just devolve into soft, non-competitive sheep that just try and make everybody happy and want to appease everybody. I mean, this country wasn't built on appeasing. This country was built on compromise, but vigorous debate. And we've lost the ability, especially young people, to even debate. I mean, my colleagues at the Daily Wire, you know, we don't really deal with this because we don't dive into the heavy political stuff. I mean, you go see all these young people shouting and screaming and shouting down people like the Nazis did in early Germany, and then they call you the Nazis. Like, we've lost our ability, we're losing in the young generation the ability or want to be competitive. And when you lose that, you fall back to the pack. And there are other countries now that are chomping at the bit to see what that gold medal tastes like. And if we don't get our act together and these young people don't figure it out, and I don't know if they will, because, I mean, they think you can be a girl if you're a guy or a hawk or all this crazy stuff. Well, Mike Tyson had a saying, all that stuff's good till you get punched in the face.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's what China and Russia and them want to do to us. You think they're going to care? If it ever went down, you think they're going to stop invading because they're misgendering? You know, people in San Francisco, those are the first people to go, man.
No, they're probably loving the degeneracy that has happened in this country. Speaking of politics, why do you think politics has gotten into sports? I don't understand the who they're appeasing. Who is the politics for? Because I don't know anybody that wants it.
I think there's always been a little bit of politics in sports. The question isn't, is sports apolitical? Because I think it's impossible for anything to be apolitical. I mean, you can make the argument NIL is political. I mean, the transfer portal is political. When you come down to it, it's governed by laws, even though the body of laws is the NCAA is crumbling, you know, faster than ever before. I think any time are now in this political race between left and right, anywhere there's a big group of people, it's going to infiltrate because it moves the needle. Enough people in this country still love sports where it moves the needle if you see something political, you know, in the sports world, whether you're on the right or the left. Now, we know mainstream media, they're always going to pump in the propaganda from one side, from the left side. There's not a lot of Republican or conservative or libertarian voices on ESPN. I think we could all agree on that. But I think it's they've tried to use it to hijack narratives, man. I mean, look, isn't that the game? Right? When you're trying to win people over to your side or get enough people to vote on your side or get enough people to believe in what you're espousing, you try and get your beliefs into the things that have the most people watching, and that is sports. But I think we're seeing, and thank goodness, and I feel like we're on the front line of this and the front wave of this. Sports fans, you know, there's some people that don't love sports enough where they can say, you know what, I'm done watching sports because of this. There's a group of people like that, and some of them can be won back. But you have people that are diehard sports fans that said up to a certain point, listen, I'll take this because I have to have sports. Well, now those people are saying, look, that's fine. We'll just watch sports that are just about sports, which I think is why you're seeing the NCAA women's basketball tournament having better ratings than anything the NBA has put out this year. Why? They've made that about the play. And it just so happened that the play on the court has been elevated this year a lot because of stars like Caitlin Clark and Aaliyah Boston and what we saw around the country. And in the NBA, those guys are really just out there playing rec ball, and you're getting all this left-wing propaganda shoved down your throat at the same time. So NHL looks like they're figuring it out. I don't think they're going to have Pride Night anymore. I don't want to jump the gun too much, but I feel like once you crack into that real diehard sports fan situation, and they're the ones that control the money because they control the eyes, which does control the sponsors, you're going to start to see a change, and hopefully we're starting to see that.
Do you think that's the path forward, is more speech, you know, more shows like yours or Clay Travis or Jason Whitlock, shows like that?
Well, like, I think we're different than what Clay and what Jason do. Like, Jason's mostly political. I would say he's 65-35 politics to sports. Clay's about a half and half. We're on the opposite end. We're 85% sports, and when it does touch, or if we're passionate about something, like keeping men out of women's sports, then we'll talk about it. But I don't know if it's as much as talking about the other end of the pendulum when it comes to political things in sports. I think it's just talking about sports, mainly. You know, you're never going to keep it all out. And when it does touch, you need to say what you actually think. Like, I don't... My allegiance just so happens to fall on a little bit right of center when it comes down to most of my political leanings. But I don't sit here and look at an issue and go, how can I make that fit into the political team I'm on? I look at it and go, how do I feel about that? And it just so happens that it falls to a certain way most times. But I think getting out of that, well, let's go find something political and tie it into sports, as opposed to, hey, we're going to make this about sports, and if politics jumps in here at some point, we'll talk about it. I think that's what people want.
Speaking of kind of taking random issues and tying it into sports, what do you think is at the heart of these Pride Nights for NHL, MLB? I don't get it. I don't get why they think that's a good business decision.
Look, I'm not looking at the numbers, but I know from a marketing standpoint, it's crazy to do, and you're seeing that now in the ratings and what I just mentioned. I think it's checking a box. Why does any business do that? Let's be honest. How many businesses out there are like, hey, guys, at the top, sitting in these board meetings, like, you know what? Forget about profits. How can we be the most inclusive and just shine a guiding light on super progressive issues? That, no, they're not doing that. That's not how that works. They have to be sitting back there and going, okay, our sponsors are more important than our customers. It's the only way I can think. And I don't know how any numbers would reflect that the sponsors are more important than the customers, because the sponsors are using you to get customers. So at some point, the customer is the common denominator here, therefore makes it the most important. I think their mind view is warped. They're thinking, hey, we need to appease our sponsors. So we'll check this box, regardless if we believe in this or not, regardless if our customers believe in it or not, or want to hear it, so we won't be the target of attacks calling us transphobic or homophobic or Islamophobic or name this phobia. I think that's why. It's just checking a box. It's not out of genuine goodwill. Companies are built to make money. Schools are built to make money, okay? Churches, believe it or not, make money, okay? I'm not sitting here saying there's foul narratives in that, but we all know there's been examples of it. But there is not a business out there, a corporation out there that is doing this because they really believe it. They're doing it so they don't get in the line of fire from anybody attacking them from their high moral ground and totally forgetting about the customer. But remember the old saying, the customer's always right. And at the end of the day, the customer will be right.
Do you think there's any validity to the idea that they are doing these Pride Nights specifically to exclude and ostracize players that don't want to participate in it, to otherize them?
No, I don't think it's that deep. Again, I just think they are kissing the butt of the woke side of our society because they don't want to be attacked by them. Bud Light just put Dylan Mulvaney on it. It can't be about the customers. And like, put your ideology aside. Just put it aside. Whether you believe in the trans, you know, women or actually women or regardless. We know the demographic for Bud Light, right? It's probably similar to the demographic for, I don't know, the NHL or some of these other places.
Yeah.
There is no way in hell, and I haven't seen a graph of beer consumption in my life. You know, I went in a frat in college. There's no way that the demographic of Bud Light from a majority standpoint is like Dylan Mulvaney, man, put it on a tall boy, baby. There's no way. There's no way that happens. Like, that is the prime example. Am I shocked that some New York fancy dress up store had Dylan Mulvaney wearing his clothes? No, that's exactly what I expect. That's that demographic? Probably a grand slam. But Bud Light? Why don't you put it on Grizzly next? Was Dylan Mulvaney going to be throwing in a big chaw next? Because there's just no way, man. There's no way. So that should answer your question. Is that some deep conspiracy? They're kissing ass, man. That's what they're doing.
It's like the NFL football is gay. And it's like, there's no gay person that wants that ad. They just want to watch football. It's like, football is not gay.
It's like,
gay.
Bro, like, what? I'm so confused. Like, I just want to count. I wanted to watch the Cowboys play, and all of a sudden I found out I'm gay halfway through the third quarter.
Football is gay.
Like, man, come on. Can I just see if we get this first down? Like, please?
Do you think the answer to all this is kind of what's happening in the NHL with players just being like, we're done, we're not doing it? Do you think that's how it's going to change?
Yeah, but I mean, the best way to affect the change is in the pocket. I mean, that's the best way to hit somebody. It's all they care about is money. I don't really care if they think an athlete comes out. They're like, you know, I'm not for the trans movement or whatever. And it's not for being gay people. Like, look, you want to be gay, be gay. Like, I don't care who you love. Just like with me being heterosexual, I'm not going out there like forcing this on you. I don't just walk up to random gay people. I'm like, hey, man, you're the devil for not being straight. Like, you, what you do in your bedroom is my business. But don't bring the bedroom to the ballpark. I don't want to take my kid to Let's All Be Gay Together night to watch the Orioles play. I want to take my kid to watch the Orioles play. If you want to have Bring Your Dog Bark at the Park night, great. Nobody's getting pissed about that. You know, you want to have, you know, Honor Our Veterans night? It doesn't matter if you're straight, gay, trans, whatever. We should honor our veterans. They allow us to be us. But this just jamming, you know, of the narratives down your throat when you're trying to go watch a sports game or anything like that, but it's going to hit them in the pockets, right? That's where you got to hit them, though, if you really want to hurt them.
Do you think that you should not watch sports? Like, let's say, for instance, for the Colin Kaepernick, do you think it was a good idea for people to boycott the NFL?
Man, look, I'm not huge on boycotts. To me, it's about the reasoning, right? Like, boycotting the Vietnam War, I can understand that. Like, I can do, I don't know, at the time, like, I didn't live in that time. I don't want to sit here and you know, just cast aspersions, but I can understand that. But fake oppression to me, which is what it, Colin Kaepernick, if you know Colin Kaepernick, I mean, this man's lived so privileged, it's ridiculous. Like, I did a whole expose on Colin Kaepernick. I mean, he's Papa Doc from 8 Mile. He went to Cranbrook, man. Like, this guy didn't struggle. Like, you got in an argument with your parents about your haircut? Wow. Wow, man. You're the first person that's ever happened. Here, let's start a movement. But it's fake oppression. No, I have no time for it. Like, it was about a country being supposedly being racist and a league being racist, where the highest paid portion of that league, 70% of that, is one color. And it's not white. So if it's racist toward anybody, 70% of the players are black. That's the highest paid portion of the league. You know, so I think that the facts don't back it up. I thought that Colin Kaepernick did that because his playing days were behind him, his best playing days. And we've seen that. Look, if you're good enough, they'll let you play. They don't care who you bow down toward or what political ideology you have. You can put that ball in the rectangle with the paint in it, they're going to pay you. So I thought that was a fabricated boycott, in my opinion.
Well, it's also interesting because it's like in the past, you know, you think about somebody like Muhammad Ali, who actually sacrificed a large portion of his career for a belief in something. Kaepernick's never been more famous. He gained the world by becoming a victim, you know, and it's a direct representation of where the power lies when you can see it happen.
Look, he ended up being a very average NFL quarterback. He is a hell of a crybaby, though. One of the best.
Yeah, one of the best, all-time best crybaby.
Again, difference between him and Jussie Smollett is Jussie Smollett got caught. But if you read enough about this guy, you'll catch him. It's fake outrage. It's ridiculous.
So you had a big news story month and a half ago, the Leah Thomas story. How did you come into that story? How did you get the lead for that? And how did it kind of end up in your lap?
Well, this to me is just the craziest. Like, we talk about when politics and sports do intermingle. I mean, this Leah Thomas situation, like, what are we doing? Like, I just, before we even get into like what it's truly about, who this person really is, it just, we've gotten to a point now in our society where, you know, you can say that up is down and down is up and 2 + 2 = 5, and people have to find a way to make it, you know, make you right as opposed to telling you you're wrong. I mean, having men in women's sports, and we're not talking about chess, like we're not talking about 4 and 5 year olds running around on a soccer field. We're not talking about the average Joe. I'm not going to pull a man and a woman out of a Wendy's drive thru and say, hey, y'all play pickup. We're talking about people who do sports. This is what they do, that are in shape. We know that males have a biological advantage over females. That's just obvious. Like, everybody knows that, regardless of what political side you're on. And this Leah Thomas situation, it just always, something smelt funny. Because if you truly wanted to be accepted by just being considered a female, why wouldn't you be considered a female and just swim against other men the way you have your whole life? Like, why is that the straw that breaks the camel's back? Because you know you have a biological advantage. I mean, you're lurch compared to these actual women. So it always smelt funny to me and my brother and David. And we ended up having Riley Gaines on, somebody who tied with Will Thomas, goes by Leah Thomas, at the Women's Nationals. And we got her on for an interview, and we had talked a little bit about, you know, what had happened. And we had heard her story, but when she explained it before we started recording, I mean, it just blows your mind. It just, that you wonder how in a civilized society, how we've gone through, you know, these different evolutions to become what we are now, regardless of how you think the evolutions went down, that we're even arguing about this, or this is a thing. I mean, she talked about being in the locker room with the other biological women, and then just a 6'4" man walks in there and pulls his pants down while they're all naked. Nobody told him anything about it, or that he would be doing that. And that in itself was astounding to hear. And then she tells you about competing and about the NCAA representative saying that Leah had to hold the trophy, not her, for photo opportunities, even though they tied down to the 102nd. And then she talked about, hey, you know, this Leah Thomas person isn't really who everybody thinks that he or she is. And so the more she went into it, she started divulging some information that she had, and that started the thread And it was all public knowledge. You can go see the tweet at JakeCrane_CRAIN. You can go see it. It's still up. It's public knowledge through Instagram and social medias and things like that of alleged, and we use that word, alleged autogynephilia.
Go ahead. Explain what autogynephilia is for everybody.
It's basically, for lack of a better term, it's a fetish where you get aroused as a man by dressing up as a woman and being accepted as a woman around other women. So like, for example, through public knowledge, allegedly, Will Thomas, now Leah Thomas, who identifies as a woman, is dating another man that identifies as a woman, and they're lesbians. That's through the work that we've done. We'll use the term alleged because, again, it's something we got off public forum. So it's not something that was invented or created out of thin air, and you can go see it for yourself. And my point was not that I don't agree with that line of thinking. Okay. But our point was not that that's something we don't agree with. Our point is that because what you do in your bedroom, okay, is up to you. I'm not going in there. Okay. There's things I agree with and that I don't disagree with. And if this was a private person that was doing this, that I had no idea or was not the face of a movement or the face of a movement that wants to let males be in the bathrooms and locker rooms of our females. So like my sister or your mom or your grandmother or my grandmother, because that's not happening. But just kind of exposing a light on that all these people are not these knights in shining armor or damsels in distress that they make them out to be. And actually the person that the NCAA has chosen to be the head of a movement of letting men invade women's sports and now having to believe that men can actually truly be women to the point where they can compete against them. There's a lot more to the story of what is going on. And we did our research. We have an unbelievable team that assisted with us. It got an incredible, it went viral. And it should. So at the end of the day, what we put is out there and we stand by it.
Why is it important, so to tag Leah Thomas as an autogynephile, which I think you've done successfully through your reporting? Why is that important to note for women's sports? What about it makes it especially worse than, let's say, if he was an honest in his desires, right?
Yeah. Well, I think there's a couple reasons. I don't think there's one narrow reason. What makes it so dangerous is that there's multiple reasons. Number one, it's just true fair play. I mean, we cannot have biological men taking over women's sports. There was a weightlifter, a male weightlifter who's not, doesn't really identify as trans, but entered the women's national competition and broke all the records. And he's the coach of like the Russian team to prove a point. Like in most sports where there is true physical output, men have a biological advantage over women. And what will happen is all women's sports will become is another version of men's sports, because women just, regardless of how hard you work, that's the saddest part. And that's what Riley was saying. She worked her whole life, got up at 6 a.m. her whole life, swimming her whole life. And she cannot beat, if they train the same way, exactly the same, a 6'4" biological man with bigger lung capacity can, you know, has more pull, is stronger, is longer. We know this. So that's one thing. It's just true fair play. The women aren't going to have an outlet. They're not going to have sports anymore, which is awful. And it totally degrades anything any feminist or woman has done before. They're rolling over in their graves at this. The second thing is what I call the slippery slope argument. So if we're going to say they can compete in their sports, that means they can be in their locker rooms. That means that men can legally be allowed to be in women's locker rooms, whether the women want it or not. I don't agree with that. So if they're allowed to be in the locker room, then that means they're allowed to be in their bathrooms. Now, it doesn't just affect female athletes. It affects females in Target. It affects females everywhere, where men can now go in, regardless of your motive. I don't care what your motive is. Biological men should not be in the bathroom with biological women. And at some point, you know, women are trying to step up. They need more voices to come out, more high-profile voices. Some are coming out like Riley and Taylor Silverman, and you saw Megyn Kelly come out. They need voices to come out to stop this. But men are going to have to stop this too. Because I'm going to go ahead and tell you, Taylor, my fiance or my daughter or my grandmother or my aunt, they're not sharing a bathroom with biological men. I don't care what you say or what you think. And I'm trying to stop trans violence or any of this stuff before it happens. Because you think you've seen violence against certain groups? Let men just start going into women's bathrooms. And now you're putting men that are going to have to defend their women if something happens, or just in general, in a very, very bad spot. Because the way I look at it is, I'm getting married May 20th. All right. I'm responsible for protecting my fiance. That's what I'm responsible for. When I told her mom, her mother, that I was going to marry her and take care of her and do the things I need to try and give her and our future kids the best life possible, I took on that responsibility. Now, that doesn't give me the right to go out and find reasons to do that. But if it comes down to it, it is my job as the man to protect her. And that's what I'm going to do. And then my daughters or my sons or anything like that. So you're putting people in an awful spot on something that should be similar. Now, in that same token, Taylor, I understand that we have to be able to compromise on things. People are going to be on the fringe and extremes and at the end of the spectrums on all type of arguments, especially in our society nowadays. But there has to be a compromise. What's the answer? And it's not capitulation, but it's being able to come to the table and say, you know what? We're not going to agree wholeheartedly at any point in time. I'm not going to get everything I want. You're not going to get everything you want. Well, let's do this. Let's set up a transgender division in sports. All right. If there's enough people that identify as transgender in that category and want to compete, that's fine. Let them compete. You're not going to see a transgender division in the NBA or a league that big. There's not enough people to fill it. But in some of these sports, if you want to be a weightlifter, that's fine. Have a transgender division. Male, female, doesn't matter. We have boxing weight classes in boxing. I get that. Have a transgender boxing division. All right, but I don't want to, it can't be male versus male or male versus female, whatever. It's, you're transgender, you identify. I don't care if you're a 6'2", 225-pound person that identifies as a woman versus a woman that's 5'4", 120 pounds, identifies as a man. Everything's equal, right? Equal rights, equal fights. Y'all get in there and knock it out. So I think there is a compromise there, but just letting them invade women's sports and women's safe spaces, man, hell no.
You know, I saw that reported of the, I think it was boxing had the transgender league that they're going to make.
Yeah, but it's not really a transgender league. Like, they're letting biological males have to fight against biological males. That's just boxing, man. No, y'all say it's equal. You want to do weight classes? Great in the transgender boxing. But I thought the whole point of this was that there's no difference between men and women. So if y'all going to have a trans, prove it to me. Okay, UFC, let's see how that goes. I can go ahead and tell you how it's going to go. That's why they'll never do it. See, that's the problem, Taylor. What did I say earlier about people that cherry pick these arguments from other people? You can only believe it to a certain extent until what? Somebody gets punched in the face. If they do a transgender UFC division, the biological men will put on women's outfits and beat women to sleep in front of God and everybody. And that's when all of a sudden it hurts their movement. So I don't think they ever truly want that. They deep down, they know they can only do it up to a certain. In swimming, you can get away with it because nobody's getting physically hurt. All right. You don't have to worry about a woman sneaking her way into the NFL or Major League Baseball or the NBA. That's not going to happen. It only goes one way, and they want to keep it out of the physical sports, like that you can get beat up.
Yeah, I don't love the idea of a transgender league because it's almost giving validity to the idea itself, and it's like,
well, but again, like, so what's the how does anything get done then? How does anything get done? Because what you're going to see is, if you do that transgender division, it's going to be so obvious that the men are so much more dominant than the women that it's going to hurt. How do you expose? What do they say? What's the best disinfectant? Sunlight, right? Sunlight. That's fine. Boxing, transgender division. Go ahead and put it on TV. I want everybody to see it. I want the children to see it. I want the men to see it and the women to see it. And when you watch what happens, let them put a girl out there in a collegiate football game and run it back one time. Let go ahead and just what? Sometimes you just got to let people make mistakes. You got to let them make mistakes because it's way different than letting just men play in women's sports. That should never happen. That should be stopped. All right. But if you want to expose it, we can sit here and I can tell you about it and what would happen. And you can imagine in your head, and that's great. Imagining in the head does nothing to help these people that believe the opposite side. They're going to have to see it. They're going to have to see it to the point where they look at it and go, oh my God, there's no way I can argue against it. How do you do that? Transgender UFC division. Just watch. It'll take care of it. It'll last 3 days. It'll be like the Hunger Games, man. Like, just, it's, I'm telling you, it's crazy.
Well, watching Fallon Fox fight people was just, I mean, it's
great example. Great. Turn that on. Look even to you. That look even to you. That's a grown man beating legally allowed to beat up a woman.
Well, I'll tell you what I thought was really interesting about your reporting is that online you saw a lot of people say, oh, like, that proves that Leah shouldn't be swimming, but they're still quote unquote true trans. And to me, it's like, that's such a stupid argument. It doesn't, it functionally, it's the same thing.
It's, yeah, they, like, look, I don't care if you're a true trans, fake trans, trans am, or a transformer. If it's a guy playing against a girl, it shouldn't happen. Like, the whole point wasn't just, oh, look at the weird stuff that goes down in this person's sex life. I can agree. I can say that it's alleged sex life, that it's weird. Okay. But to me, it's you made this person the face of a movement. You let this person go change in the locker room in front of actual biological females who were also changing. You know, the person in these pictures that if you see, you'll understand what I'm talking about. So again, if Leah Thomas was somebody that I didn't even know, okay? If I didn't know, you would have never even heard about that because I wouldn't have cared. But you made this person the face of a movement that little girls should look up to. Look up to that? Go ahead and look it up. You want them to look up to that? Then if you do, then that's a you problem. That's a whole different conversation. But on the field, like I said, true trans, Transylvanian, trans partner, Pacific partnership, whatever. It doesn't matter. Men should not play against women in sports.
I agree with you. I think you guys have done really important. I've never seen so many people. It brought a lot of people into the discussion because it really accentuated what's at stake. I think your reporting did that.
When you get down to the core of it, and I'm not saying everybody, and again, I don't agree with it, all right? And I'm not out here trying to hate people or anything. But at the end of the day, the truth's the truth, man. And if you're going to let that type of person or somebody with the potential to be that type of person go into my fiance's bathroom when we're out or safe spaces like that where I can't protect her or anything like that, then we're going to have a problem. That's when the men meet you at the door. Now, men in society today, I mean, we're falling off a cliff. It's unbelievable, man. Like, I know Jay-Z said, less is more. There's plenty of us. But at a certain time, dude, it gets dangerous. That's just where we're at, man. And we'll always speak what we believe is, you know, the truth, and our reporting speaks for itself.
It's not about being ugly to people or hating on people. It's about protecting women at the end of the day.
That's my job. That's when I signed, when I put that ring on her finger, that's what I signed up for. And some people say, oh, look, at the end of the day, I know what my job is. I know what I'm supposed to do, and that's what I'm going to do.
Well, Jake, I appreciate you doing this. Where can people find what you're working on?
Yeah, man, this is a lot of fun. Typically, I'm just talking about, you know, who's going to mess up and draft Will Levis. This is a nice little changeup. You can find us. Go to YouTube. It's Crane & Company, C-R-A-I-N and Company. We're on the Daily Wire, Daily Wire Plus for the sports show over there. You can find us on all social media platforms. We talk everything, man. The Booster Club is a chat that, you know, we involve during the show, and we take live call-ins. We have live call-ins Monday, Wednesday, Friday. So, yeah, man, check it out. It's a little bit different than the stuff you have to watch on the mainstream ones. And if you're wondering which one I am, I'm the good-looking one that's always right in the middle.
I love the show. I'm a big fan of the show. And your monologues at the beginning are getting better and better every week. So I appreciate you.
Look, I used to do them just straight off the top of my head, and now I write. It's so funny. Real quick, I know we got to go, but so I do a monologue, and we have a cold open, then I do a monologue, and I started writing them probably about 3 or 4 months ago, and I enjoy it. And it's so funny. My brother does a segment called It's Mid, just where he just, it's hilarious. It means like average. Like, it's average. Some people think it's great, but it's really average. And so he did his like off the top of the head for the first 2 times. And so Cone does his Get Off My Lawn segment to the prompter too. So Blaine did it's Mid through the prompter last time. We get done with the show, and he looks at it and he goes, man, reading on the teleprompter is so much easier than doing it. I thought we had it. I'm like, yeah, man, why do you think we do that? Like, it's just reading off the prompter, man. Like, that's why I always laugh when Joe Biden messes up, because it's so easy. Like, it's hard to go off the top of your head. Like, regardless of what you think about Trump or whatever, like, going off the top of his head is hilarious. But that's why I always laugh. But nah, man, yeah, check it out. It's a lot of fun.
people. All right, Jake. And what is your Twitter handle?
It's at Jake Crane underscore C-R-A-I-N. That's me, man. You'll check me out over there. I'm a lot more active on Twitter, but you can follow us on Instagram, Facebook, all that stuff. We have a Facebook group as well. That's a lot of fun.
Awesome. Thanks, Jake.
All right, Taylor. Appreciate it, buddy.